You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is William Fitzsimmons, and I'm the only white man celebrating the culture of his black daughter. People define their identities in different ways. And I have what I think my job, the best thing I can do, is to give her as many different doors to walk through as possible. I want to be supportive to those, to the choices that she makes. And that includes, by the way, if she needs to go through a period where she is frustrated or even angry that her daddy is white, she's allowed to do that.
What if, while looking to adopt, two babies stole your heart, one white and one black? And when you looked at them, you just knew that they were both your daughters. William Fitzsimmons, singer, songwriter, and producer, adopted his two daughters with his now ex-wife, knowing that as a white man, it would be important to learn to take care of his black daughter's hair and educate himself about her African-American culture. But what would you do if a cultural reckoning swept across America and put a harsh spotlight on the racial differences in your family? Would you try to stay low until things settle down? Or would you celebrate your daughter's heritage for all the world to see?
Unfurl your gown, a distant fuller's skin.
Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all too familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show.
I knew you once.
William Fitzsimmons. Hello, William Fitzsimmons. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Laura?
I am doing really well. We're so excited to be speaking to you today. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on and tell us your story. I have a question for you, though, before we begin.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us, what's the first song you played for an audience?
The first song I played for an audience. I mean, I shudder to think. I bet it was a Christian worship song.
Oh, okay.
And I And I am both shocked and embarrassed at myself for admitting that. But I started out playing music in a praise and worship band at my first wife's church. Her father was a Methodist pastor, and I think it was kind of an in into the family, so to speak.
Right.
So, yeah, I've gone different routes from that moment. But yeah, that was probably the first song where there were actually human beings listening to it.
Wow. So, and I think I remember that when you got married the first time, you were just 20. Is that right?
I was 20 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were young.
I was a baby.
You were a baby. But you, had you been playing music for a while at that time?
I grew up in a very musical family. Mom and dad, both musicians, not professionally.
Right.
But that was a extremely important thing for them. My parents are both disabled.
Right.
They're both blind.
Yes.
And in the blind community, you know, music can take on a different role. Hearing becomes a very important sense whenever sight is taken out of the equation, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, so it meant a lot to them. And I feel like I didn't have a choice, if I'm honest.
Right.
It was sort of, it's not like they were, you know, hitting my knuckles with a ruler if I played the wrong chord on a piano or something. But it was this unsaid expectation, like music will be a part of your life regardless of if you want it to or not.
Right.
But I'm grateful. So I grew up playing a bunch of different instruments and hearing my parents do the same.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit more about your parents later, because I think that's just fascinating to me. But thank you for that. Thank you for that visual. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the only one in the room. But I am never the only one in this room, because as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So
yeah. Everybody laughs.
It's pretty. I usually say I call him
so
Hun.
Good.
But
uh-huh.
Sometimes honey, too.
We're going to send you a Hun hat.
Yeah. We have to get some more.
We got, yeah.
So good.
Regarding this subject, more than 40% of adoptions are transracial in nature. Did you know that, Hun?
I did not know that. That's a lot.
Yeah. And since transracial adoptions have become even more popular by celebrities, made even more popular by celebrities such as Angelina Jolie and Charlize Theron and Sandra Bullock, many people consider them to be on trend, which I think is really interesting.
That's sad.
Yeah. Well, it's just that people need a label for things, right?
They certainly do.
But circa 2020, there's more of an emphasis on the responsibility of the white parent of a black or biracial black child to provide that child with the reality of what it means to be black in America. A few weeks ago, today's guest sent me a message which read, in part, I used to think of myself as pretty culturally woke, reading books about transracial adoption, raising a biracial daughter, watching countless tutorials on the proper care and maintenance of biracial hair. And then parenthetically, he says, I can't braid yet, but I'm learning. Over the last couple of years, the last couple of years have caused me to face some deeper issues and made me examine what it really means to be an ally, what it means to raise a black daughter as a white man. So singer, songwriter, and music producer William Fitzsimmons is here with us today. And welcome, William.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on again. Your daughters, you have two daughters. One is Luella and one is Josie, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. How old are they?
Luella is 6 and Josie is 8.
Oh, so cute.
Oh, perfect.
They're like the perfect ages.
Fairies and coloring and princesses.
Yeah, all of that.
I have two daughters.
I know so much about Disney and LOL and Nickelodeon.
As you should. Yes. Yeah.
Just surrender to the process.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, completely. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, Scotty's daughters, my bonus daughters, are 21 and 16, and they still love fairies and coloring.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have a lot of they're just girls, you know?
Being fathers of daughters is quite a treat, to be honest with you.
Okay, so I want to just go back to your parents for a minute, because I was so fascinated with their story, and I think it lends to your strength of character and your only oneness, because you grew up as a seeing child of two blind parents, right?
Correct.
And both your parents were born blind, is that right?
They experienced hypernoxia in incubation. They were both born premature. And this happened with an entire generation of children. Incubation had gotten good enough that they could keep a baby alive that was born at 7 months. But the technology was not advanced enough where many of the children ended up having like ocular damage because of not understanding how much, what percentage of oxygen and all those things to use. So all that to say, my father lost about 90% of his sight by the time he was of gestational age. And my mother lost her sight completely. So by the time her eyes even opened for the first time, she never saw anything. So my father can understand color. When he was much younger, he could see my outline pretty well. Sorry, it's this is an emotional thing still a bit. But my mother and I have never had eye contact ever. She touches my face. She can to tell how long my beard's getting and all those things. But right. But yeah, she's my mother. If you say this is red and this is yellow, that doesn't mean anything to her.
Yeah. Wow. And so going to school and bringing home friends, I mean, imagine, and I think we actually talked about this, that you got teased a little bit at school because of that, right? Like,
well, I was the only one in the room, so to speak, that had disabled parents.
Yeah.
And that was children are really, really gifted at identifying differences. Mm. We have a tribal quality to us as human beings. We like noticing what's different and what's the same. We encourage children to do that in school and compare and contrast kind of things. And I was an easy target for that reason. I was the person that had the weird parents.
Right. Right.
So yeah, they made good use of that subject.
Yeah. And there are more stories, and I don't want to get too far into your parents. We might have to have you back just to talk about that subject. But I was just so fascinated by the idea of being the seeing child of two blind parents and what that must have been like. And I do think it went to your strength of character and how you see what's going on right now in the world. And as the father of a biracial daughter, I'm sure that there's a kinship there. Like there's an understanding there of how the world might see her as opposed to your white daughter.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. I might not understand the specifics of that. I can't. I'm a white man.
Right.
But I do know the feeling of being different.
Yeah.
So I think exactly what you said is correct. I think if I did gain character from that, I think it was because I did have to go through that experience.
Right. And so I want to jump ahead, but you went to a Christian college. I think we talked about you playing in a Christian, what was it? What kind of band?
I guess praise and worship.
Praise and worship band. Yes.
Yeah.
At that time you were married and you were a young man. You were only 20 years old. But you didn't adopt your daughters until you had remarried the woman who's now your ex-wife, right? And you guys share custody of your daughters.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so when you went to adopt, I don't know, is it Josie that you adopted first?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And the agency asked you something to the effect of, why are you adopting instead of supporting the child and allowing her to stay with her mom? Was that correct?
That's correct. And what a minefield of a question to try to answer.
Yeah.
And you, Laura, you and I have talked about that before, and I still don't know that I was thinking about this earlier this week, and I still don't know that I have a dynamite answer to that question, if I'm honest. I think for me, it came down to, this is the wish of the birth mother, that she is choosing this. This is not an agency that, basically buys off the birth mother, makes her disappear, and then, pushes a stroller into someone else's house.
Right.
I was lucky. My ex and I were lucky enough to work with an agency that did put a primacy on the experience of the birth mother, to the point where they didn't encourage adoption. They encouraged birth mothers being given the opportunity to make whatever choice they felt was right.
Okay. Right. And what state are you in at that point? What state are you in? Tennessee? No.
Illinois. Yeah. But Josie was actually born in St. Louis. She was, so she's actually from Missouri.
Right. And so, so you guys have gone to the agency, you want a baby, And there's this beautiful biracial girl that's up for adoption, right? And then the questions, is that right?
That's right. There's a little more nitty gritty in it that's, I think maybe people don't talk about much,
tell me.
Which is you fill out a form and you literally tick boxes of the things you're comfortable with a child. And this is where the rubber meets the road as far as ethics and morality and, you know, makeup of the person, drug use by the parent, mental health background of the birth family.
Right.
All these things you literally check boxes that say, like, yeah, I'm okay with a biracial child, but not a black child. Mm. Or, you know, it's okay if the mom did some weed, but not if she did coke.
Right.
And look, it's not for me to judge anyone else's experience. I don't know if I could handle raising a special needs child, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, and I don't think it would be right for someone to say, well, that makes you an evil person.
Right.
But something about it felt like going to the supermarket.
Right, right.
And I was like, damn it, I just want to be a father. I don't care. You know, I obviously part of it too is that you have to know yourself well enough to know what I can handle, what are my strengths as a father. You know, it's not that I wasn't thinking about it, because some of those questions are very important. Maybe you have a family background of your own with substance abuse, and the idea of having to make that a part of your regular life would be too much to handle.
Right.
But anyways, it struck me as very, very inhumane about something that is very human.
Right. And so did you check off biracial? That you'd be okay with that? Did you check off black? Like, what did you check?
Aaron and I, we checked off everything.
You did? You said you'd be okay
with
it. Oh, that's so great.
We just, maybe that makes me sound really awesome.
Yeah.
But I think it was more about Aaron and I, my ex, us just knowing that we wanted to be parents and feeling like we had the ability to deal with many different scenarios. Mm-hmm. So we should be open to those scenarios.
Right, right. Yeah, I really love that. And I didn't know about those forms. And it does that selection process doesn't sound very humane. It sounds the opposite of what the reason that you were adopting was to have this human to human connection with this person that you wanted to parent. And like you said, just be a daddy too.
Just be a daddy. And yeah. Doesn't it have the scent of ownership to it?
Yes. Yes. It really does.
And we all know as parents that good God in heaven, we don't own our kids.
No,
they are very much their own human beings.
Yeah. We are privileged to be able to spend the time with them that we do, you know, raising them the best that we can. But truly.
Absolutely.
My goodness. If I had control over my kids, that would be great.
Right. Oh, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it if I could.
Right, right.
Or they will even stop trying, right?
Right, right. Yeah. We will stop trying.
Been doing it for 8 years. It ain't working.
You'll keep trying. This episode's being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, hon, I have a problem.
What's going on, honey?
I thought I knew I was getting everyone on my holiday list, but I went to Voyage AC, and there were so many amazing things, so now I'm confused.
Well, maybe I can help. What are the choices?
Well, they have these new scents and a whole new line of face and body products, like this highly effective, fluffy collagen and elastin super hydrating face cream, and this elegant moisturizing eye cream. And there's also something I was actually thinking about buying you, hon.
Eye cream?
No, but we could all use a good eye cream, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is a new body and intimacy oil made with all safe organic ingredients, Bulgarian rose, jasmine, vanilla, fractionated coconut oil, and organic almond oil, all organic essential oil.
You had me at fractionated coconut oil.
Well, maybe you'll find a bottle under your tree this year, hun.
I'll be looking forward to it.
So if you haven't started your holiday shopping yet, don't worry. You can take care of everyone on your list at Voyage AC.
One-stop shopping.
Yes. And Voyage AC has absolutely everything you need. Amazing gifts, faux fur throws, beachwear, diffusers, clutches, beach bags, clothes, gorgeous mix and match gift boxes, and these brand new face and body products. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now, even through the holidays. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
So it's a domestic adoption. So you adopted children that were born here in the States.
That's right.
The moms are involved in, you said they're like aunties to your daughters. Is that right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's what I said, and I still stand by that. It's the best way to describe it. It's probably different for everyone. You know, the history of closed adoptions, I won't go off into that tangent, but they were basically made to protect children that were sent from the East Coast into the Midwest during sort of the alcoholism pandemic that was happening, I think, in the early 1900s, prior to Prohibition. And you had all these people that were being sent to sanitariums. And there were children that were left as orphans. So people, they assumed that these children that were born to alcoholics were sick in some way, diseased.
Right.
So they would close the adoptions so that by the time the trains would come to whatever town, there was a blank slate, you know. So the history of a closed adoption is actually not a bad thing. It was done for the sake of giving these children a decent home. But nowadays, that there's been really solid research that shows that open adoptions give children a much better shot at emotional adjustment later in life. Mm. So we chose to do that, even with all the lies and myths that people, you know, oh, they're going to show up on your doorstep in 3 years and with a gun,
right,
and they're going to want their baby back.
Right.
You know, that's just, it doesn't happen. It happens on CSI.
Right.
But it's just
not in real
life. That
ain't
real life.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen, you know.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that history about closed adoptions at all. That's really interesting. And thank you for that. I wanted to now jump ahead again because I want to talk about you raising a biracial daughter. Let's see. What do you think strangers do or say or feel when you guys walk down the street, you and your two daughters?
There's a couple thoughts that would come before I'm the father.
Right.
I think one would be that's Luella's friend.
Mm-hmm.
and what a cool dad I am to allow her to have a biracial friend, right?
Right.
You know, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
That I'm some kind of a progressive hero for having taken on this poor child.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a wildly dangerous attitude and idea and belief to have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that, again, we were educated to specifically fight against. And people will say it to you, Laura. They'll say, you'll get white people all the time. They're like, I think that was such a brave thing to do. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Mm.
It's brave to raise a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's brave, or stupid, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
But what in the world, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is it's just a beautiful, smart human being. So the thing, we would always flip it around. We would say, no, we're really lucky.
Yes. Yeah.
The kid, Josie's not lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I get to have her as a daughter.
Right. Right. Oh, that's so good. And then so tell me, how do you acknowledge the difference between your two daughters while still treating them the same?
I think it's a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier about the kind of tribalism that I think exists in humanity. And with a background in psychology, I'm kind of fascinated in these dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's this weird balancing act of acknowledging that they are just as much sisters as any two young girls I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
They fight like sisters. They love like sisters. I almost cried today. I picked them up from school an hour ago. And Lou's in first grade. Josie's in third. And so Joe walks down to Luella's classroom to walk her out. And she was walking up the parking lot holding her hand, just making sure her sister was okay.
Oh.
You know, blood doesn't make, I could go off on a lot of tangents here, but blood doesn't make family.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It's about love. It's about loyalty, you know? So they're not confused about any of it.
Right.
This is their sister, period.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that coin is that it does mean something to be black.
Right.
It does mean something to be biracial. It means something to be white. When those things started, what effect those things have, that's, you know, people have been arguing about that for a long time, but I think it's the part that's the same for both of them. For me, is that they are sisters. They're both my daughters. They're both humans. They both have unique strengths and weaknesses. The part that's different is that Josie already has an awareness of her difference in a way that Luella doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She sees it. She sees it with the president. I know she's only 8, but she's very aware of politics at her age.
Right.
I try to shield her from some things, because I want her to be a child. But she knows, for example, that black people have historically been treated horrifically in this country.
Mm.
And
how does she know that?
She has family that have made her aware of some things, maybe a little bit before her time. And
your family? Or family members?
Aaron's
family.
My
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
okay.
So she has two biracial cousins.
Okay, right.
That have a black father and a white mother.
Mm-hmm.
And they are 20 and 16.
Okay.
And, you know, they spend plenty of time with them. And there's been comments made. And I'm not mad at my niece and nephew for doing that. I think at some point people have to realize the truth. And I think it's important to learn about it.
Mm.
And we have attempted to find different books, different children's books that are age appropriate.
Right.
That will teach them about like what Ruby Bridges and Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really good one that Aaron bought that I believe it was about the first black ballerina at the New York Ballet Company.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
So I mean, this is a challenge for every parent anyway. I mean, when
Absolutely.
Do you teach a kid about the Holocaust?
Right, right.
You know, what's the right age to teach them about sex?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these things are mysteries, but...
Well, and the rule of thumb seems to be that if they're hearing it from the outside world, it's time for you to teach them because you want them to learn about it the right way. So if their friends are talking about it, that's what I was told. Then I got to go in. You know, I have two boys. So when my boys started to hear about sex, it was important for me to talk to them about it. And then I have two biracial boys, but they both present as black.
So as soon as the world started talking about race to them, I had to go in. And I remember our first conversation was, they were both like, well, what's race? I was like, it's what you are. And they're like, the thing you win, like, not a race amazing. That you run in. It's so hard to explain what to a 4 and a 5 year old, what that means. It's not just the color of your skin. Yeah, that's how old they were at the time. And someone had made mention of my older son's skin color in a way that was unkind in class. And, you know, he didn't call him the N-word, but what he said to him was confusing to my son. And so the teacher confronted both of them and, you know, tried to explain why that was not a nice thing to say. The kid didn't seem to know that either. He had been repeating something he had heard at home. So, you know, I'm digressing. The point was that people said that's the time to go in for sure is when they're hearing it from the outside.
Yeah. And I think that coincides with things that I've read as well.
Yeah.
Because the likelihood of misinformation from those, I mean, you know, a 14-year-old boy learning about sex from other 14-year-old boys probably isn't ideal.
Right. Right.
You know,
probably.
I mean, it's not ideal for anyone. Mm-mm. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's still a hard subject to broach because it's uncomfortable, you know, just like talking about race is uncomfortable or it can be.
It is. It can be. That's probably a good way to say mm-hmm. it. It's a weird thing to have to feel like you need to put your hands over your child's eyes about things that you probably shouldn't. You know, I don't know if it's okay to talk too much about current events or anything.
Sure, anything you want. Speak freely.
You know, the Breonna Taylor verdict that came in.
Right.
You know, I have a couple good friends that are lawyers, and I was asking them questions about some of the charges and things. And I don't want to speak too much in hyperbole or be too histrionic, but that could have been Josie.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the reality is that we still live in a horrifically racist country,
right.
And that my daughter is holding the short end of the stick.
Right.
So I have to, you know, I have to protect her somehow from that, but also prepare her.
Yes.
You know, what's the line between those two things? Protection and preparedness.
Yes. I mean, those are the conversations that Black parents are having with their Black children all across the country. And that's right. why it was so important for us to talk to you, because you're a white parent having to have those conversations with your Black biracial child. And I say Black biracial because there are obviously many ways to be biracial. So
sure.
She is sure. biracial, white, European, and Black American, right?
Yes, yeah. yes. And that's, you know, and I maybe this is not necessarily right, but I'm sure you're familiar with the hypodescent rule.
No.
You know, this was the idea from a couple hundred years ago that was basically if you have a drop of blood.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's Black. Then you're Black. Mm-hmm. Right. And I still think in large measure that is sadly, it's relevant, you know, is that Josie, she'll be seen by most of her white peers, not as biracial. But the initial thing they'll see is that she's Black.
Right.
You know, because of her hair, because of the color of her skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, it robs her of some of her individuality. I mean, she's like the coolest kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like her race is a part of that. Of course it is. But mm-hmm. what a sad thing to limit somebody just to that one thing.
Well, and that's really interesting that you bring that up. So tell me about where you live right now.
I live in Jacksonville, Illinois. It's an hour and a half from St. Louis.
Oh.
So we are kind of at the bottom.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're more Cardinals fans than Cubs fans.
Got it.
So, you know, people always assume we're close to Chicago because you say Illinois, but mm-hmm. we're 4 hours from Chicago.
Right.
A town of 19,000 people. We are surrounded by feed corn and soybean fields.
Wow.
We have a Walmart. We have an Applebee's. And that's about it.
So this is a relatively small town.
It's farm country. It's a small town.
Yeah.
It's farm country.
And you are a musician living there.
Correct.
A professional musician with two daughters that you have joint custody of. They are little. They're 6 and 8. So these are little girls. And you are a single dad for all intents and purposes, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so the culture of your community, I'm going to guess, is not traditional Black culture.
Have you ever been to Kentucky?
I have, yes. It's beautiful country there.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is.
Yes.
And I have seen Confederate flags on the back of trucks in my town, the town that Abraham Lincoln was the senator for several years, only 35 minutes from here.
Okay.
You can still visit his house mm-hmm. in Springfield, downtown Springfield. That's where his presidential library is.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, culturally, this reminds me very much of my time when I lived in the South. And that was a bit shocking because I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm more of an East Coaster myself.
Right.
And I assumed that everyone knew that we were a part of the Union, not the Confederacy. But if you lived here, you might be surprised to know that.
Yes. Yeah, I can completely see it. I think you painted a really nice picture of where you live. So back to Josie being this really cool girl, and one of the things that makes her cool is her race. How is she getting her culture? How is she getting Black culture? Or is she exposed to it at all?
I mean, I suppose that would depend on the definition of what that means. And I'm not trying to be argumentative.
No.
But I'm saying how are we defining Black culture?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so for me, right, it is gatherings of people with that identify as Black, and there is a certain lexicon and language that is used when more than one Black person are gathered together. There's a shorthand that usually comes into play. There are conversations about race all the time. Race is always discussed at a Black table.
Right.
And then there are conversations about the things that separate us from the dominant culture, our hair, our skin color, our athleticism, things like that are common conversations, our food. So that's what I think of when I think of Black culture and our history mm-hmm. as well. But I believe, and you know, someone, if you've had a different experience and you're listening to this, please let me know. I've only had that experience in groups. I've not had a solo or a one-on-one experience that feels like a cultural bath to me, where I'm like, okay.
Oh, well said.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know that a lot of people are advised to do things like racial socializing when you're looking at a transracial adoption with whatever, obviously not just Black, but whatever race your child is. You want to socialize them with people from that same race or ethnicity. And are you able to do that there?
It happens mostly within the family, with ex's brother-in-law.
Right, yes.
Being a Black man and having two biracial cousins sure. that are older.
Yeah.
But, you know, the young girl is an oft babysitter, you know, and I mean, I think at her age, she's spending most of her time texting her boyfriend.
Of course.
As opposed
16,
to
16, right?
Share. Yeah. Yeah, 16. So, mm-hmm. you know, sharing in the cultural experience is not quite the same for her. That's been the modus operandi.
Right. That's
for the
great,
time being.
By the way. That's
well,
really
it's,
great.
It,
yeah.
It is. And that is one reason why I think we felt comfortable. And if I can speak to Josie's birth mother, why she felt comfortable with allowing us to raise her daughter. Was because she knew that she was not quite literally going to be the only biracial child in the family.
Right, right.
And I think she might have thought otherwise about choosing us mm-hmm. if that had not been the case. As she gets older, I think that's going to look different. And you know, this is a conflicting issue for me just as a parent in general, you know, because to what extent do I need to help her define who she is, and what extent do I need her to do that? Travel, for example, is a very important thing for me.
Right.
Right. I literally had a fight with my mother when I was 17 years old because I say, I'm not going to go to college. You can pry me out of this house with your cold, dead hands.
You said, I'm not. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's funny.
I'm not. Oh, and I was serious. I mean, I was dead serious. And what happened was once I started moving around the country and then moving around the world, I started to fall in love with it and be intoxicated with it. I want to give that specific experience to my children as well. You know, they're getting to the age where they're almost old enough where they can come out on tour with me for a little bit. You know, it's a little bit too much late nights and whiskey for a 6-year-old.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there's no there's no whiskey that's good for the 6-year-old. Right.
No, but Laura, to your point, I have to admit that that's an area that I'm going to have to be intentional about in the very near future, specifically because this town does not offer those kind of experiences. It just doesn't.
Yeah. We interviewed this man. His episode came out a couple weeks ago. His name is Cole Brown. He's 25 now. He just turned 25. His book is called Gray Boy, Finding Blackness in a White World. It's really good. And it's about him finding who he was growing up in this very elite spaces that were predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents had thrown him into Jack and Jill. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
It's basically a social group for black kids. And it has an elite reputation because they're selective about who gets to come in. But the purpose of it was to take these black kids from these different elite spaces that were predominantly white and give them that social cultural experience with each other.
Right.
So right. He was forced into it. It was an add-on to church. Like he would go to Sunday school and then have to go to Jack and Jill. So he was not happy right. with the whole Sunday experience.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But he talks about being very grateful for it later in life and having some lifelong friends from there. I'll send you the episode.
Please
you can
do.
Check it out
yeah,
because I
do.
Think you'll find it really interesting. And you talked about you lived in the South. So you were East Coast Philly kid. Is that what you said? Or Pittsburgh? Pittsburgh.
The better side of the state.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you. Do not get those confused. Yeah. But you lived in Nashville for a while where you were recording, right? Is that right?
That's correct. Lived in Nashville for a year.
Uh-huh.
Made a record while I was down there. And you know, a part of that was attempting to expose the kids to a little more city, urban environment. And for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which being the divorce, you know, we felt the best thing we could do for the kids would be to return them close to family.
Yes.
Extended family, familiarity, you know, because I think they were feeling pretty alone. Josie actually will bring that year up often and say, like, Daddy, what was the worst year of your life? Because mine was when we lived in Nashville.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah,
how old was she then?
Yeah. She would have been 6.
Okay. Oh, so that wasn't that long ago. Yeah, she was Luella's age. That's interesting. So she needs to be near her family. That's what she's telling you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And it, to the point where we got her a cell phone this last year and one of those like child safe cell phone plans kind of thing. And she has a fully black niece. Which I love that my daughter has a niece. She has a niece that is older than her.
Oh.
So this is her birth sister's daughter.
Oh, I see. I see. Yes. Yes.
And they are very good friends and they text all the time.
Wow.
And watching an 8-year-old text is like both the most beautiful and the dumbest thing I've ever seen. They'll literally just like, they'll call each other and just sit there and like read books on their own, but the phone is on for some reason. I'm like, Joe, you have unlimited minutes, but this seems weird to me.
I remember doing that though. It's just like parallel play. You just want them. It's like having them in the room with you while you both do separate things, right?
Yes, that's exactly it. Josie doesn't have obviously a fully formed awareness of what her racial identity is. It wouldn't be possible at 8.
Right.
But she is aware to the degree that I think she does tend to gravitate towards young girls that also appear to look a little bit like her.
Mm, yeah. That's really interesting. And that's really cool that you can provide her with that, you know, that there are those opportunities for her to connect like that.
Yeah. It's not as many as it needs to be. But, you know, this is one of those weird things about life where you have to balance out what the child wants and what you feel is best for them.
Yeah. I mean, and it also might be. I didn't have any cousins growing up, and I went to all white schools, independent schools. And I had beautiful friendships with people, and I had a great childhood. It was around high school that I started to really feel the impact of my race. But I mean, I don't know that I would have done anything much differently, honestly.
You don't feel like you missed out?
I don't. I mean, maybe I did, but I don't remember growing up wishing that I had more Black friends.
Interesting.
I just loved my friends, you know. I wish I had a boyfriend when like, you know, I was 10 and everybody was kind of pairing up the way they did, which wasn't really anything but just a declaration. Like,
no, what? Well, yeah, yeah. No, what you mean is you wish you had met Scott then.
Right, right. I do. I wish I had met Scotty then. But other than that, my memory is not that was something. Like, there were other things. I was really, really thin, and I wished I were not.
She wore double zero jeans.
I did. I wore two pairs of double zero jeans.
Is that even a thing?
It was a real size when I was growing up, I was still painfully thin. Like, that's the stuff I remember. I don't remember the race thing being such an issue. Like I said, in high school, it was different. That's really when dating starts, and I was made to feel very aware of my race, and it was important for me to find other people that were experiencing the world in the same way then. But so, you know, yes, absolutely, you know, always look for those opportunities for her, but I wouldn't assume that she's missing out either, as long as you're giving her, you know, what you can.
Right, right. And that's a... You know, most of life lives, it's in a bit of a gray space, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I do think there is some, pardon the pun, I do think there's some black and white things. I think hurting children is always wrong, for example. That's right. A pretty black and white one to me, you know. But there's a lot of things that occupy a very different space. You know, I like the way that we talked about presenting, you know, what race you're presenting as.
Yes.
And you and I talked, and you know that I have a black girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about some of the ways that she was raised, and I think about her in relation to Josie.
Yeah.
And it makes me consider that people define their identities in different ways.
Yep.
And I have what I think my job, the best thing I can do, is to give her as many different doors to walk through as possible, you know, and not try to narrate that too much, you know. Like, I definitely don't want her to ever date a musician.
Good luck.
That's a lock. You're her daddy. That's all she's going to date are musicians.
Well, that's the God help all of us. That's the problem, is that we are so cool.
Yes.
It's hard for women to stay away from.
Like I said, it's a lock. It's done.
Freud had a couple of things right.
Right? Uh-huh. Next. Yeah.
But I want to be supportive to the choices that she makes. And that includes, by the way, if she needs to go through a period where she is frustrated or even angry that her daddy is white. She's allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. It's not going to feel good, but I'm here for it.
Mm. Well, that is love. That is really love.
Well, it's what you do. Again, doesn't make me a good guy. It makes me a parent.
Right.
That's what you do. And it's like, probably easy for me to say that now because she's still in the, you know, daddy, if I could marry someone, I'd marry you stage.
Yep.
You know, and she says that even knowing how hairy my back is, which is kind of awesome. I'm like, maybe this is love, you know.
That's great. So would you do anything differently with regard to your daughters?
Would I do anything differently? No.
Hmm.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've made mistakes.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I would say, you know, I'm an artist, so my default is self-obsession.
Mm.
So, you know, those early years, whenever the baby's crying and I'm trying to record a song.
Right.
And I can hear it on the microphone. I mean, that still happens every day, by the way.
Of course.
I've gotten more frustrated than I wish I did. But no, I believe... And this will sound really dramatic, but I actually mean it. I believe I was supposed to be their dad.
Right.
I don't know why. You know, maybe God's got a great sense of humor, but like, I actually feel like I would have felt incomplete if Josie and Luella had not been my kids. So in that sense, I nothing. I wouldn't change anything.
Mm. I love that. Thank you. And then what advice would you give to a white dad who's thinking of adopting a black or biracial daughter?
I would say two things. One, acknowledge that you're a racist, because I would argue that every white person in America has elements of racism in them.
Mm-hmm.
Some probably, you know, get to the point where they're not at all. And some, it's a very big part of their lives. But that was a big moment for me, and it was an important one. I don't like to say it. Doesn't feel good to say it.
Yeah.
Not very on brand to sell records.
Right.
But acknowledge that, first of all.
Yeah.
And the second thing is to be a student. I always say that, and I never know how that sounds to people, but I really annoy my girlfriend because I'm always asking her questions about her life. and it's not because, like, I'm trying to learn how to be a dancer. That's what she does. Like, that's not, I don't want to be a dancer. She has so much to teach me about her experience and her life, and I want to know it because I care about her, you know? Yeah. So even with my kids, I have to be a student.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Stay curious and acknowledge my massive blind spots.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I've got a lot. Like, I'm still in therapy. Mm-hmm. I have a master's degree in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I got a lot of work to do still.
Right.
You know, so if someone was thinking about it, like, I would encourage them to pursue it if it's something they want, if their heart's open to it. But those are two really necessary things to go through.
Right.
If you go into it thinking, like, the worst thing you could do is the white knight.
Right.
And that is something that happens, that I'm going to save this poor black child from having to live whatever life they were going to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring them into my, you know, forgive me, Gwyneth, my Gwyneth Paltrow experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she's great, by the way. I'm not having a go, but
I know what you
that's
mean.
Not what this yeah. is. Yeah. There's no element of rescuing.
Right.
Involved in transracial adoption.
Yeah.
0%. 0%. I'm lucky. That's what I said before. I'm the lucky one.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I actually do have one more question before you close, because you have a new music video out. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yes. Yeah. Can you just tell me a little bit about what's next for you on the music front and what you're doing right now, so people can geek out on your music after this?
Well, that's very nice. I finished a new record. I want to say recently, but it was quite a while ago. The pandemic kind of changed a lot of things. But yeah, the label is releasing these kind of slowly,
mm-hmm.
to sort of bide time until we can actually tour the record again.
Right.
You know,
that has to be really strategic, right?
Entertainers are, and for good reason, will be the last ones to get back into the workforce because we need crowds in order to do our job. Yeah, I have that new record that'll be kind of slowly seeping out.
Okay. All right. Well, it's very cool. I watched it the other day and you are so talented. Your music is beautiful.
Well, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scotty knew who you were right away. I had to look you up, I have to admit. But
can you tell my kids that? Because
I will. I'll tell them how cool you are.
They're like, Dad, like, does anybody know who you are?
Yeah. Well, they say the quest. They always ask. They're like, and I think they're saying it to be like to throw some real good shade. They're like, Daddy, are you as famous as Rihanna?
Oh.
And they already know.
Right, that you're not.
They already know, like, they know the answer to the question already, and it feels really shitty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But they just want to, like, make, like, rub it, you know, like, rub your nose in it a little bit. Like, she's...
They love me, but they, like, they also kind of want to put me in my place a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
so great.
Yeah.
William, tell me where people can find you.
It's just my name. It's WilliamFitzsimmons.com.
Mm-hmm. And that's FITZS... as in Sam, IMMONS.
You're the third person that's gotten that right in my entire life.
Oh. I'm so glad. I thought you were going to say I got it wrong.
She does her homework.
It doesn't seem hard to me, but people mess that up all the time.
All the time, yep, yeah. So I'm going to thank you so much for this interview. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And Laura, you got to keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
You got to keep doing what you're doing. It's like people need... like more than ever right now. They need this. Not me. They need like what you guys are doing.
Mm.
It's really, really important. I can't stress that enough.
thank you. And I actually disagree. I think they do need you.
Yeah, we do need you.
Yeah, because your story and the way you articulated your experience is really unique and important. It's not that unique, actually, but it's not that often that you hear it, like I said. So I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you so much, William.
Thank you, William.
Review your crime, beautiful girl. Let the sunrise come again, beautiful girl. Your sailor eyes, the water in the well, a thirst to fill.
The Only One in the Room has brand new interviews for you every week. You won't want to miss our full episodes every Tuesday, Scott Talks on Wednesday, and our new Thursday series, The Now Normal. And twice per month, be sure to catch our 30-minute Sunday edition by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to tell us about your Only One story. All of us at The Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.